Matirna Krishna Padata Svatova Mito Vipadyeta Grihavritanam Andam Gopir Vishitam Tamishram Puna Punas Charvita Charvananam Sri Prahlada. Control senses. Persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress towards hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. Sri Prahlada Vacha Komara acharit pragyo dharman bhagavataniha durlabha manusham janma tat api martalam. Prahlad Maharaj said, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements, the human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful because it's human life. One can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. So it's very interesting that this very large section of the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is dedicated to this great soul, Hiranyakashipu, and his great soul son, Prahlada Maharaj. But it's interesting, whenever, even when we do the Nrisingadev play, somehow Hiranyakashipu always comes out the star of the show. Turns out to be the Hiranyakashipu play. Because maybe it's because we identify so much. It's easy for us to perform that bhav, you know, of, you know, not Nrisingadev only has a cameo performance, but the bulk of the play is Hiranyakashipu being the obnoxious fellow that he is. Is it on? Yeah. So I've been asked to kind of summarize a chapter and a half of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and this interesting chapter 3, talks about Hiranyakashipu's meditation and ultimately his performance of very severe austerities. And this is kind of the way life is, right? We make a goal, and based on what our goal is, we create an action plan. And the action plan can range from getting drunk and laying down in the street to going to 8 years of university and getting a, you know, an MD or a law degree or whatever. So depending on what our goals are, though, we do what we're going to do to achieve what we want to achieve. And here, Hiranyakashipu, he had some pretty high aspirations. It wasn't like he didn't have his act together. He was just a you know, mean old guy who had a power. He was on a power trip. He had some very, very lofty aspirations. He wanted to take over the position of Lord Brahma, and he wanted to actually rule everything in the material world. He wasn't aware, or at least he wasn't in this particular headspace that he was in at this particular time. He wasn't really conscious of wanting to go beyond the material sphere, but he was pretty fixed on taking over the material world. He wanted to control all levels of material existence. He wanted to take over, and he did ultimately take over all the responsibilities of all the different demigods.
How's that, folks?
I'll never be a radio announcer. I hate microphones. Anyway, okay. So he was determined to get into this position. And it's interesting how he went about it, because he wanted to take over the position of Lord Brahma. And so he placated Lord Brahma. He, you know, talk about the ultimate apple polisher, the ultimate brown nose, that he actually performed very severe austerities with the intention of satisfying Lord Brahma, who was his worshipable deity. But his ultimate determination was that he was going to take over Lord Brahma's position. He didn't actually succeed in doing that. But that was his intention. Prabhupada mentions it here in these purports, that that was his intention. He wanted to dethrone Lord Brahma. And Srila Prabhupada refers to another demon named Rakasura. I don't know how many of you are aware of the story of Rakasura. But Rakasura was another such person that he placated Lord Shiva. He did austerities to Lord Shiva. They were very interesting austerities also. He cut off his flesh bit by bit and threw it into the fire. And praying that Lord Shiva would accept his offering and respond, and respond by giving him a benediction. Now, I don't know how many of you would think of such a thing, that, well, if I cut off my flesh strip by strip, and then by the time I get to cutting off my head, then perhaps my worshipable deity will come forward and offer me some kind of benediction. There's no connection in my mind. But in the mind of the demoniac, connections are obscure. They don't think the same way that we may think. Hopefully we're not in the demoniac, asuric, rakshasa kind of category, and so we don't think this way. But here was a person, the Kashara, he began putting his flesh into the fire, and sure enough, when he got to his head, Lord Shiva appeared and said, you know, what can I do for you? And he said, well, what I want is I want a benediction that will say that whoever's head I touch, that person's head will blast into pieces and they'll die immediately. So he was also contemplating that by performing severe austerities, I'll get a power which will allow me to control. His conception of control was being able to be destructive, to be able to kill anybody just by touching them. And he decided to start out with Lord Shiva. That was a little prompted by Krishna helped him out there, because Lord Shiva was in danger. He was in danger. What to do? What to do? What to do? So he was running all around, and here's, you know, Vakasura running after him, trying to touch his head, and he took shelter of Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu said, let me take care of this. So he went to Vakasura, and he, in the form of a young boy, Brahmin boy, and he said, you really believe that benediction? I mean, you know, Lord Shiva, he's not famous for really having a lot of opulences or being able to do really far out things. And, you know, sometimes he's even known to kind of exaggerate his prowess. And maybe this benediction he gave you, maybe it doesn't even work. How do you know it even works? So he's Vikashara, because people, you know, there's in the Bhagavatam it says people of like mind, they think others think the way they think. Right? We look at others and we think, don't we all do that? We always think that everybody thinks the way we think. So when we're right, we figure that when we have an idea, it must be a way that everybody should think. And if people don't think the way I think, then they're wrong. It's as simple as that. So Vikasara, because he was a demoniac mentality, his thought was, I'm going to cheat, I'm going to lie, I'm going to steal, I'm going to, in Jewish they call this word finagle, I'm going to manage to twist things around and get them the way I want them. So he was thinking, well, maybe Lord Shiva's like that also, you know. Actually, maybe he's a liar and a cheater and a finagle, because, you know, how I think, that must be how he thinks too. So he started to think, you're right. Maybe Lord Shiva tricked me. Maybe he really didn't give me this benediction. What should I do? And so Lord Vishnu, he said, well, you know, I think what you should do is try it out. You should try out the benediction, see if it really works. And he said, well, what should I do? He said, well, touch your own head. See, probably doesn't work, you know, so you should just touch your own head. So he did. He touched his own head, and his own head blew up. And that was the end of him. But we see in that little story that the demoniac mentality, it doesn't really see things through all the way, right? It was pretty elementary that if the thing worked and you touched your own head, you were going to be history. But he couldn't think that far. He was just so consumed by envy and anger and the conceptions that somebody else was trying to cheat him, and that he didn't see that far. And we have Hiranyakashipu in a almost similar position. Hiranyakashipu thought it through further. He was He was diabolical and he was quite ill-motivated, but he thought it through quite well. And he decided that he wanted to, that Lord Brahma had achieved his position as Lord Brahma by doing austerities, right? All, you know the story from the first canto, the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Mahavishnu lays down in the ocean, or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu lays down, and from his navel comes the lotus stem, and there's Lord Brahma, and he doesn't know what he's doing, so he does. He hears the word. What word does he hear? Tapas, austerity. So he starts performing austerities, and from the austerities, Krishna is pleased, and then he achieves the ability. He's given the ability to understand how to create this, the creation. So seeing that and thinking, well, you know, the only impediment to me achieving that position is that Lord Brahma's life is longer than mine, then he made the determination that even if he had to do austerities through multiple lives, he would just come back again and again and continue his austerities until he achieved the same power as Lord Brahma. So here he is, you know, he's meditating on how to take that position. And Lord Brahma is so magnanimous that he becomes actually inclined to give him what he wants. But Prabhupada points out in this progression of austerities that Hiranyakashipu does, that when Lord Brahma appears to him finally, because the demigods are choking, this happens a few times, it happened with Dhruva also, right? That when certain people do these austerities, they actually choke the universe. Chaivanamuni also, when he was doing his austerities, he was choking the universe, couldn't breathe. People in the spiritual world, here they were, in the material higher planets, they were getting so hot from the fire that was emanating from Hiranyakashipu's head that they went ultimately to Lord Brahma and said, you got to do something about this guy. And ultimately he's trying to placate you. He's trying to take over your position, but you've got to do something about him. So Lord Brahma, knowing that, he went with a few people, and he went to where Hiranyakashipu was performing his austerities. And at first he couldn't even find him, because Hiranyakashipu was covered by an anthill. And he had been, bushes had grown around him. He had been there for 100 celestial years performing austerities. That's a really long time. And so you can imagine, you know, the material energy had progressed and done its thing. If I left my backyard for 100 celestial years, it would look like heck, you know, when I came out there. So even if I leave it for one summer in Florida, then I have weeds, you know, up to the sky, and unwanted living entities come. So he was covered by like a forest. And at first when they were looking for him, they couldn't find him. And then they saw this fire emanating from him. And that's how they could tell where he was. And Lord Brahma was astonished. He was actually astonished that he could undergo such severe austerities. And when he sprinkled water from his kamandalu, his little water pot, on Hiranyakashipu, immediately all the inebriety that had come from so many years of austerity, he actually was said, Prabhupada speaks, it's interesting, Prabhupada speaks about how Hiranyakashipu was just living in his bones. He had no skin, no muscle, no anything. He just had his bones. Everything had been eaten by ants and other living entities, and he was just living, holding his life air within his bones, doing these austerities. Truly an amazing feat. And Prabhupada, in some of the purports, he says that yogis can still do this. It's interesting, I saw a video, a documentary video, about somebody who had done some experiments with yogis, and he had put them in airtight vaults, and locked them in, and left them there for hours and hours and hours and hours. They did it, of course, voluntarily. But because they were so able to control their breath, when they came out, they were fine. They didn't suffocate. Any ordinary person would have suffocated. But they were able to consume such small amounts of oxygen and control their breathing to such an extent that they weren't harmed in that situation. Prabhupada says that this can go on for even years, that yogis can be buried alive and then be taken out and still be alive. And Prabhupada speaks that there are those who even say that's what happened to Jesus Christ. that Lord Jesus was buried in a tomb, and then he was taken out, or he escaped that tomb, he got out of that tomb, and he was alive, even though he was buried alive. But because he was such a mystic yogi, he could survive in that situation. So Hiranyakashipu, he was expert, and Lord Brahma spoke about him in very honorific terms. He said, "You've performed austerities that nobody could perform. I'm really impressed." You know, he didn't say that he didn't intimate, "Hey, you're a demon, you're trying to take over my position." He was totally respectful. He said, "I'm immortal. All of us are mortal. So even though I can't give you eternal life, still your austerities will not go unrewarded." From that point on, for the rest of this chapter, Hiranyakashipu proceeds to glorify Lord Brahma as if Lord Brahma was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I read it a couple of times because I was wondering, maybe I missed something, that at some point Lord Brahma interjected and said, "Hey, excuse me, but you're talking to me as if I'm God and I'm not really God." But occasionally we see in the way Prabhupada addresses these verses and purports that there's the shift between Hiranyakashipu addressing Lord Brahma as if he was the Supreme Person, as if he was the source of everything, as if he was the creator of everything. And then there's little hints every once in a while that he knows that he's not, like the capitalization of the word "you" or "he" in the verses. So he glorifies Lord Brahma in such a way that you're in charge of everything. You can do whatever you want. You're the source of everything. Everything's coming from... He even calls him the super soul sitting in the heart. And Prabhupada again and again reminds us that Lord Brahma is not really any of those things. That, you know, to differentiate between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Lord Brahma. And he reminds us again and again that there's two different kinds of creation. There's Sarga and Visarga, the primary creation and the secondary creation, and that Vishnu is the primary creator in that he creates Lord Brahma and he creates all the ingredients from which the universe is created. And then Lord Brahma becomes his student, so to speak, and under Vishnu's tutelage, he's able to create everything else, all the secondary creation. So then we move on, and Lord Brahma gets Hiranyakashipu's wish list. And you can feel, at least I could feel when I was reading these verses, that Hiranyakashipu's mood really shifts when he starts to give his wish list. And he says, you know, "I want this, and I want this, and then I want this, and then I want this, and then I want this." And he's trying very hard. Prabhupada says he's actually really planning very, very carefully how he can make himself basically immortal. He realizes, "I can't be immortal because even the demigods aren't really immortal. Lord Brahma's pretty immortal because at the end of his life he goes to Vaikuntha. But pretty much all other living entities are temporary, and I'm just a jiva, so I must be also temporary. But I'm going to craft my desires in such a way that they'll basically make me infallible." And the living entities in general try to do this as much as possible. Even though we somewhere in the back of our head understand that we're going to die. We're going to die. At some point we're going to die. And even the sound of that doesn't sit right with us. It's like you're not supposed to say that stuff, right? This is, especially in America, this stuff is quiet. No one talks about the fact that you're going to die, man. And no one's supposed to say that. Like that's a secret. And we all go about playing as if we're not going to die. We're not going to die. We're going to go to the doctor. He's going to fix it. We're going to take pills and vitamins, and it's going to all be okay. We're going to dye our hair. We're going to look young. And when we look young, we're going to feel young. And we're going to make every effort to be immortal. We're going to conquer disease. It's just now coming. Don't worry. We'll solve the problem of Alzheimer's before you forget that you have to go to the doctor to get treated. There's so many efforts being made to make it feel like we're eternal. And why is that? Because when we're eternal, or when we think we're eternal, we don't take care of the business of the ultimate goal of human life. Right? We focus instead on what? On economic development and on sense gratification. Right? Karma, artha, kama, artha. That's what we look for. When we're not thinking about moksha, when we're not thinking about the goal of human life, what to speak of prema bhakti, then we're focused on artha, getting stuff, right? And kama, enjoying that stuff. These are the two things that are described in the Bhagavad Gita as weaknesses of heart. That I think I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the whole material world, shebang, it revolves around me. It revolves around me. I'm in the center. I may not be in the center of the whole world, but at least I'm in the center of everyone in my sphere of influence. And they're going to, I'm going to manipulate things so that my needs are met. And my needs are met by accumulating material things. So these are the two. One is that I'm the center. I, me, mine. And the second is that my happiness comes from material things, from material energy, from my interaction and manipulation of the material world. These are the two weaknesses of heart as given in Bhagavad Gita. So Hiranyakashipu, he had a severe dose of these two weaknesses of heart. That he wanted to be the supreme, he wanted to be the supreme controller. And he was making arrangements right now, here. He had thought it out so carefully that Prabhupada says he said specifically animals because he thought, well, Hiranyaka, my brother, he was killed by a boar. So I got to watch this Vishnu guy. He's a tricky fellow. He may take the, you know, a form of a boar or some other animal and kill me. So I don't want to be killed by any animals. And then Prabhupada attributes his not wanting to be killed by natural death that he says, I don't want to be killed inside or outside. Because if I die, I have to die inside or outside. So I don't want to be, I can't be killed inside or outside. I can't be killed by any being created by you, he says to Lord Brahma. Don't let me be killed by any. I can't be killed in the day or the night, on the land or in the sea. So in so many ways, he kind of created an apparent situation where he was, for all purposes, practical purposes, immortal. And we do the same thing. Maybe on a slightly smaller scale. Because we're not able. We're not able to perform those kind of austerities. But we perform austerities. We perform austerities, right? We work 10, 12 hours a week. We take a very short, you know, lunch break. We eat junk all the time. You know, people, because they're working so much, they get up in the morning and they just throw some coffee down their throat and, you know, light a cigarette and stumble out and go in traffic and drive for hours. And they live their lives in a way that they're killing themselves from the day they're born, practically, to accumulate some money so that they can play golf on the weekend or whatever it is that they have their sense gratification about. And this is their idea of, because they're not thinking of death, they're only thinking of enjoying. And Hiranyakashipu was like that. He was not thinking of death. Death, okay, now, death, close your portals. A famous line from our many dramas about Hiranyakashipu. Death, now I'm immortal. Death, close your portal. Right? That now the door to death, I've taken care of all the back doors, side doors, front doors, all the windows are securely locked. I have a good system. Now I can go about my enjoyment and I don't have to consider any longer these problems that other people face. So that was, Hiranyakashipu's mentality. It's described in detail in these verses that are in this third chapter. And he performs his, so he gets his, and what does Lord Brahma say? Tathashtu. You've pleased me. The austerities you're performed are inconceivable. The requests that you're making are very difficult to achieve, but I'll give them to you anyway. I'll give them to you anyway. So now, in Hiranyakashipu's mind, he's an immortal fellow. And being an immortal fellow, he proceeds to execute his plan. And the fourth chapter, the title is Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe. And he actually gets to the point where he makes everybody in the universe subservient to him except Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Those three remain in their positions. But everybody else, bow down, mister. Right? Offer obeisances to me. It was described that he even took over the positions of all the demigods. He put his men in positions. He took all the sacrifices, all the results of the sacrifices, and he enjoyed them for himself. And he wouldn't give any to the demigods. So they were starving to death. They were suffering. They had been removed from their locations. They had been sent away, disenfranchised. And now they were starving to death. They were homeless. They were destitute. Bag men and bag ladies they had become. Very uncomfortable situation, right? For one who has been exalted, being depleted is worse than death. For being, now you were so famous, so powerful, and now you have nothing. So they went, the demigods all went to Vishnu. And they pleaded with him in a very kind of pathetic, heart-wrenching, look at this, we've created a monster. Lord Hiranyakashipu is terrorizing the universe. And it's very interesting what happened, because in a voice that came from the sky, they heard Lord Vishnu say, okay, I understand you're having a hard time. This is very difficult for you. Hiranyakashipu is not behaving himself nicely. And eventually, when his son, who is a great devotee, is harassed by him, then he will be killed. So don't worry. Now imagine, some people say, you rate your pain. Did you ever hear that? You rate your pain. So let's say you're at pain to the level of 9. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10. That's pretty severe pain. Right? Someone's putting your hand on a hot wok. Right? How long can you keep it there? A few seconds. If someone said to you, okay, well, don't worry, because in about, 2 years, I'm going to take your hand off. So just, relax. Could you do it? No way. But the demigods were suffering like anything. They were starving to death. The material world was upside down. It's described that Hiranyakashipu wanted everybody that was not suffering to suffer and everybody that usually suffered to not suffer. He was trying to turn the laws of the universe inside out. He had everyone terrorized in fear. They were doing, it's described that the earth out of fear was giving everything. The oceans out of fear were giving everything to him. Everybody was terrorized. And what Lord Vishnu said was, listen, he's going to have a son. Right? That's going to take at least how long, sons don't just pop out. So he's going to have a son. And we know that his son actually, his wife was pregnant and, whatever. And then his son, and then he would terrorize his son for 6 years. 6 years. Prahlad was 6 years old or 5.5 years old. And then he'll get killed. And with that reassurance from Krishna, they all said, okay, fine. And they went back to suffering. They went back to starving. They went back to not having any material facility. And they were patient. Such patience. Can you imagine? Such patience. And we, if we don't get our wish list when we go to Santa Claus, then we get very angry. If we go to God and we say, God, this is what I want, and God doesn't give it to us, we don't believe in God anymore. We become atheistic or agnostic. But these demigods were such devotees that just Lord Vishnu's promise that, don't worry, eventually this guy is finished. It's just a matter of time. They were perfectly okay with that. Hari Bol Giri. You have a test? Good luck. You look like you're in anxiety. So this is the nature of the devotees. It's an amazing lesson to learn how to be so patient that we can be willing to experience suffering and at the same time know that Krishna will take care. The Pandavas were like that. They suffered so much. So many different things happened in their lives. But they were confident that Krishna would take care. So they were just waiting for a breakthrough, something to happen. They knew it would happen. It was just a matter of time. And they were confident that Krishna would take care. And we see that in many cases in our histories. And even Narada describes, he's talking in these passages here, he's talking to Yudhisthira, he's narrating this story of Hiranyakashipu to Yudhisthira, Narada Muni. And Narada mentions that even he had to serve Hiranyakashipu every now and again, because he also was in a subservient position. And Prabhupada says that sometimes it's necessary when there's a tyrant, a materialistic tyrant, that even the devotees have to take a subservient position in order to keep things together until Krishna can take care. We see that with Vasudeva and Devaki, right? They had all their children, and their children were killed one after the other. They were living in the prison house of Kamsa, and they were just being patient. Well, okay, yeah, this son will be killed, this son will be killed, this son will be killed. Knowing that eventually Krishna would appear, and he would take care of everything. He would annihilate Kamsa. So they were being patient. Imagine the amount of tolerance and the amount of patience. If we could just have a little bit of that, we'd be in really good shape. So we can aspire. Now the verse, what happens here ultimately is this section ends at verse 29 in the fourth chapter, where Krishna tells the demigods that don't worry, I've got it covered. You know, what's going to happen is this. These are previews of the coming attractions. And then what's going to happen is that I'll kill him then. And they're happy with that. They're okay. And they leave. But the verse that I'm supposed to, we're going to chant together and talk a little about is verse number 20 in the fourth chapter, which I'm finding right now. There it is. And if we can chant together, is it up there? Yes, it is. Okay. All glories to technology. Evam Aishvaryamatasya Driptasyo Chastravartina Kalo Mahanvatiyaya Brahma Shapam Upeyusha. Somebody else want to chant? Evam Aishwarya Matasya Viptasyo Chastra Dvartina Hello Mahanadiyaya Evam Aishwarya Matasya Jitasyo Chastravartina Kalo Mahandati Yaya Brahma Shaptam Upeyushaha. Any of the ladies? Vaishnavis? Anybody? Evam Aishwarya Matasya Driptasyo Chastravartina Kalo Mahanvati Yaya Brahma Saptam Upeyusha. Okay. Evam Thus Aishwarya Matasya of one who was intoxicated by opulences. Driptasya, greatly proud. Utshastravartina, transgressing the regulative principles mentioned in the Shastras. Kala, duration of time. Mahan, a great. Vyatiyaya, past. Brahmashapam, accursed by exalted Brahmanas. Upayusha, having obtained. Translation. Hiranyakashipu thus passed a long time, being very much proud of his opulences and transgressing the laws and regulations mentioned in the authoritative shastras. He was therefore subjected to a curse by the four Kumaras, who were great brahmanas. Purport. I'll read the first paragraph and then the rest of you can read. There have been many instances in which demons, after achieving material opulences, have become extremely proud, so much so they have transgressed the laws and regulations given in the authoritative shastras. Hiranyakashipu acted in this way. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Yashastra vidhim utshristya vartate kama karata na sa siddhim avapnoti na sukham na param gatim. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. The word shastra refers to that which controls our activities. We cannot violate or transgress the laws and regulative principles mentioned in the shastras. Someone want to read from there?
Bhagavad Gita repeatedly confirms this. Tasmat shastram pramanam te kaya kaya vyavashtita katva shastra vidanoktam karma kartham iharasi. One should understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so he may gradually be elevated. Bhagavad Gita 16:24. One should act according to the direction of the shastra, but the material energy is so powerful that as soon as one becomes materially opulent, he begins to transgress the shastric laws. As soon as one transgresses the laws of shastra, he immediately enters upon the path of destruction.
So it's interesting here, and actually in this purport and the next purport,
I recall that Hiranyakashyapu's wife was captured by the demigods. But you were explaining that they were patient. They had taken the position that only Vishnu can do something. So what was the time when they were raging?
That was before they had surrendered to Vishnu. They had captured his wife, and they thought they could deal with it, because they thought the Lord was going to be a bigger demon even than his father. And then Vishnu told them that actually he was a great devotee. And then they were harassed more, and then they went to Vishnu. And then Vishnu said, "Don't worry, because when this true devotee is born, Hiranyakashipu will hurt him, will try to hurt him, and then."
And what curse did the four Kumaras give to Hiranyakashipu?
I don't know. I was curious about that myself. Is Vishnu not saying? I don't know. We can check. I can check the commentary.
Thank you. How's the sound? It's kind of jittery. Awful like this?
Yeah, I want that.
Okay.
It's so cool.
Okay, I have a little difficulty relating to why the demigods are pleased by tapasya. Like, I can understand how Vishnu is pleased if we accept some tapasya to purify ourselves, but I don't know how the demigods are pleased. Like, if I had a son or a pet or something and I found out that they were suffering immensely, I wouldn't be pleased.
Okay, well, they were suffering to please you. Of course, the nature of the suffering is kind of grotesque. And for us, it's hard to relate to that, you know, if my son was cutting off pieces of flesh to please me, the first time he took out a knife, I would say, don't do that. You know, what do you want? These are demoniac people, and their thought process is warped. And the demigods are, to some degree obligated to reciprocate with them when they do these austerities. There's a certain kind of exchange rate. You know, it's kind of like you pay this much and you get that much. And there's a certain amount of, well, that's karma mamangsa, isn't it? Karma mamangsa philosophy. Krishna talks about it when in the Govardhan Leela, You know, that the demigods are obligated. If we give them something, they have to reward us. So why should we, you know, go overboard with it? We just can, you know, offer a little bit to Indra, and then he's obligated to send rain. So there's some degree of obligation that you do something, and then you're compensated. But I also, you know, I question the one's pleasure. I can understand Lord Brahma's appreciation of Hiranyakashipu's tenacity. You know, he really did an amazing thing. I mean, and Dhruva also did an amazing thing. You know, how you can stand like that for so long and breathe every now and again and eat every now and again. And it said that here he stood for 100 celestial years and he didn't even drink water. So very great austerity. So you'll get materially what you deserve, but you'll also get ultimately whatever else you deserve. It's not that you just get that. Yes. Microphone.
Just thinking about the last point you said about surrendering to Krishna and like depending on Krishna on for different things. It's always very confusing because I was thinking particularly about Prabhupada, how much efforts in his old age he took to spread the movement, and like, so like, is it like very internal? Do we like really depend on, like, internally we depend on Krishna thinking that Krishna,
Srila,
like,
Prabhupada, if you saw his prayer when he got off the Jaladutta, when he was on the Jaladutta, he was always completely aware that I'll do my best, but the results are up to you. And, you know, dear Lord, please make my words so that hearts will change. I'm a puppet in your hands. Make me dance, make me dance. I'm totally unqualified. I have no qualification. But you have some plan, obviously. Otherwise, why you brought me here? So Prabhupada was completely aware that he was totally dependent on Krishna. And it's not that we don't have to do anything. Look at Arjuna, right? I mean, when he finally became dependent on Krishna, and when he finally realized that he needed to just do whatever Krishna wanted, it wasn't like he didn't have to fight. He still had to fight. His consciousness changed from thinking, this is under my control, therefore I renounce the kingdom, I renounce anything that I would get from this war, and I'm willing to walk away from it and take up Krishna consciousness, to deciding to fight in a surrendered mood, depending on Krishna for the result. So he actually shifted from, you know, to a point of action. So we, in our understanding that Krishna wants to see our endeavor, but the endeavor has to be tempered with knowledge of what Krishna wants. I can only have to go because I have to take Tulsi Rani to the airport. Both of us, maybe. So if there's like muffins, we can just take some muffins with us. So that's the situation, you know, that we temper our effort with an understanding of what pleases Krishna. And if our effort exceeds what pleases Krishna, just like Hiranyakashipu, he did some great effort. He pleased Lord Brahma. He got a lot of stuff. And then he used it in a way that interfered with his spiritual advancement and a lot of other people's as well. And so it turned on him. And it became the source of his destruction. So if you over-endeavor in material ways, especially if you go against the scripture, then that endeavor, instead of bringing you positive results both materially and spiritually, will ultimately backfire on you and cause your destruction.
And what about our service if we try to over-endeavor?
I was just talking about this on the way here, that you can over-endeavor every now and again, but you can't over-endeavor all the time. Right? There's emergency work, and sometimes when there's emergency, we have to, you know, put it into another gear. And that's what Prabhupada did for the first, you know, 11 years of our movement. He was working in we were listening yesterday, Sunday, to Drishtadyumna, speaking about Prabhupada, and he was saying that Prabhupada told him that, you know, I've given all these boys sannyas at 25, and really none of them are qualified. But it's like when you make a militia, that you have to enlist farmers and young children, and you put a rifle in their hand, and you hope they can hit the side of a barn. But that's not the ideal. If I could, I would get train soldiers and I would use people who were qualified. I don't have that option, so I'm doing the best I can. So these boys, he said, you know, most of you won't make it because it's just too hard. You're not really ready. But it was emergency work. But you can't do that all the time. You have to shift out of emergency gear into another kind of consciousness to survive.
So basically, it is all about our consciousness, the internal...
That's all it's about.
Oh, okay.
That's all you offer to Krishna is your consciousness. Everything else is already Krishna's. Right? He has all the materials, he has your skill. Nothing that you have isn't already his, except your intention. And that's what he wants. He wants your love.